What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Sit Still, Look Opinionated. I'm your host, Claire Malky. That last-ditch effort to get out of the house on time without forgetting anything. Ambitious. It's officially pumpkin spice season, y'all. Which means handing over the entirety of my bank account to the pumpkin gods of Star 5 Bucks. And sometimes I wonder, what else could I do with my money if I weren't a typical millennial blowing it on coffee? I could put it into a retirement fund. But let's not jump to conclusions here. I host a podcast, for goodness sakes. And if you too are wondering how to best participate in this capitalist spiral, consider joining us on Patreon. If you join us at the $3 level, aka mildly opinionated, you'll be connected with other opinionated listeners. And you'll get real-time weekly updates about the ins and outs of running this podcast. Your continued support not only helps us keep the lights on at the Sit Still Studio, but it also allows us to pay our writers. And if we pay our writers, they're more willing to work for us in future seasons, which means more podcast episodes. We wouldn't be Sit Still Look Opinionated without our writing team. So help us buy them a PSL and join us for just $3 a month. It would really mean the world to us. This week, I'm actually recording this opening monologue from my childhood home in Virginia. In this house, although I'm a fully realized adult, I still sleep in a twin-size bed. It literally reminds me of how much I've grown. One of the things I love about this podcast is that I can work from anywhere. Podcasting has had that travel perk long before COVID made it trendy to hashtag work from home. Although I will say going through TSA with all my podcasting equipment definitely looked sketchy. Between a brick-sized microphone, a heavy-ass tripod, and 6 feet of cords, I could definitely fashion together an effective murder weapon. Hopefully no one from air traffic control is listening right now, because I would definitely never do that. And although I love my childhood home, leaving Chicago is like leaving behind a piece of my heart. Or actually a piece of my stomach. There's really not a good place to get Chicago dogs on the East Coast. The only food available here is Old Bay, peanuts, and oysters. Basically, it's impossible to eat in the mid-Atlantic if common allergens put you into anaphylaxis. But besides food, Chicago has so much to offer, like the comedy scene, local museums, and overly positive attitudes about winter. But thanks to issues with access to public transportation, land development, and to put it plainly, gentrification, there's so much of the city that I still haven't experienced. And the pandemic has definitely not made it any easier. I'm not going to choose to leave my comfort zone if I don't have to. That's called bravery. Maybe one day if this podcast takes off and we sell to Spotify, I'll have enough saved up in the bank to invest in a shapeshifter. And then bravery will just be the press of a button and I could be anywhere. We've got another phenomenal show for you all today. We have Teddy Washaltz from One City Films with us in the Sit Still studio. Make sure you stick around. Even though it wasn't totally satisfying, I'm drinking that aforementioned PSL. Grab your drink and let's get started.
Hello there. We just wanted to take a minute out of the podcast to thank you for listening to Sit Still, Look Opinionated, the podcast that is coffee for your ears.
Up next, this week's headlines. Biden is looking for a more humane deterrent for the influx of migrants into the U.S. Like laundry deterrent. To wash himself of any responsibility. Florida is considering lifting a fishing ban on the Goliath grouper, aka the big fish. This appears to be bad news for both the animal and the musical. Unlike American voters who prefer change, German voters prefer stability. And so do I. That's why we're not together anymore, Trevor. I just wanted something stable and sustainable and something that would last, but you just wanted some change. I get it. I'm cool. It's fine. China has been testing out its own cryptocurrency, forcing Bitcoin to drop, which probably actually means something to people who actually understand how the fuck that shit works. The home that inspired the movie The Conjuring is up for sale. And the best part? It comes with roommates. A Florida man attempted to trade in a car to a dealership that he had stolen the car from days earlier. And yes, by dealership, I mean swamp. And yes, by car, I mean gator he strapped a harness to. The newly elected leader of Germany must now form a new coalition government from scratch. First things first, let the yeast activate in warm water. This weekend marked the return of live theater with the 74th annual Tony Awards, which means actors can finally return to performing and quit their 9-to-5s. What a way to make a living, barely gets you by. It's all taken and no giving. They just use your mind, but they never give you credit. I swear sometimes I don't remember. It's a comedy podcast, but we can't have a singing bit. That's fine. Some healthcare workers are being fired for not getting the COVID vaccine. Now, they'll only be able to afford fast food made with antibiotics and vaccines. Hashtag ironic. It's like if a fireman went into a burning building commando. And no, not at a bachelorette. That's only okay when someone's getting married. Following anti-tourism protests, Barcelona has banned short-term private room rentals, but only the ones with mirrors on the ceiling. The cause of an Amtrak derailment in Montana remains unclear. The prime suspect? Thomas the Tank Engine. An egg was thrown at French President Macron. It being France, the egg did no harm because it was perfectly poached. But you better watch out for that hollandaise sauce. The US government is not seeking a new Cold War with China. Because right now, they're just looking for hot singles that are local. To influence others, President Biden live-streamed his Pfizer booster shot. And next week, it'll be a new dance on TikTok. Republican officials have blocked a bill that would deter a government shutdown. And Democrats have played a reverse Uno card. Due to ongoing lawsuits, Rudy Giuliani was banned from appearing on Fox News. Rudy, however, misheard this and thinks he's been banned from Fox Business Total Landscaping. Simone Biles says she should have quit gymnastics way before Tokyo, which also happens to be the title of the next Hangover movie. And finally, R. Kelly was found guilty on all charges of sex trafficking yesterday in court. And that was this week's headlines.
Hello again. We just wanted to say once more, thank you for listening to Sit Still, Look Opinionated, the podcast that is alcohol for your ears.
Anti-vaxxers. The vax to the past. The people who don't pick up after their dogs. Any way you want to swing it, those Americans who, for whatever reason, feel it is their right not to be vaccinated against the coronavirus. A pandemic that's currently destroying everyone's ability to get laid, including mine. Supposed humans who ask the questions, why do I need to get vaccinated? It's not like my choice as a patriotic American affects anyone else in this world around me. I'm going to answer that question with a few of my own. But first, I'm going to need a hard, hard adult beverage. Okay, first off, let's just acknowledge that there's already too many ridiculous reasons to even explain here. The conspiracy theories alone could feed a whole new film saga for Dwayne The Rock Johnson to star in. I mean, a microchip being implanted in your arm by Bill Gates? Newsflash! Bill doesn't give a fuck about your weird foot porn searches, Kevin. You're not that interesting. But anyway, let's get into it. Where is this question of, I need to do my own research, coming from? Now, I know what you're thinking. Claire, haven't you always told us at the end of every one of your shows to, in fact, do our own research? And you'd be right. But then let me ask you this. Do you honestly think that someone who barely passed a bio in high school is really going to be able to do more research than a freaking 40-year-old medical professional? Where would you even get this hidden vaccine research from? AskJeeves.com? In fact, you know what is more worthy than doing your own research on conspiracy boards? Trying to figure out Luke Hobbs' random story arc in the Fast and Furious franchise, played by fucking National Treasure Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Second, do we really know what is in the vaccine? Do you know what's in a Taco Bell enchilada? Can you pronounce half of the shit on the back of a can of Mountain Dew? No. Do you ingest it into your body anyway? Of fucking course you do. Next question. Third, if some spray tan huffing fake millionaire made you believe you shouldn't get vaccinated for your own safety, then honey, I can't help you. No one should be that gullible. Next question. Finally, isn't it just the basic, human, decent thing to do? Even if you don't think you're going to get deathly ill, again, you're not Dwayne The Rock Johnson and never will be, you can still pass it on to someone you love who may then get horribly sick, or even another human who's loved by another human. You could give it to Tom Hanks. You want to be responsible for killing Tom Hanks, America's dad? Do you? Tom Hanks cares enough about you to get vaccinated. So do it for him. And do it for Dwayne. Even if you have no other human empathy in your Mountain Dew-soaked heart. And it may have taken 5 broken needles just to jab it through his massive bicep, but Dwayne The Rock Johnson has also been fully vaccinated since May. So get that vaccine fast, because The Rock will be furious with you. Thanks, guys. I needed that. I'm gonna go scream into a pillow now.
Hi there. One last time, we wanted to say thank you for listening to Sit Still, Look Opinionated, the podcast that is heroin for your ears. Fuck.
Up next, my interview with Teddy Watchultz from One City Films. For today's interview, we have Teddy Watchultz, aka Teddy Waffles. He is a filmmaker and video producer from Chicago. Thank you for being on Sit Still, Look Opinionated.
Thanks for having me.
So to get us started, can you tell us a little bit about your background and who you are?
Sure, who I am. Wow. well, I say I'm from Chicago because I am, but I was born in tropical Des Moines, Iowa. We moved to the burbs of Chicago when I was a young kid, 2 years old. Grew up in the burbs my whole life, and then went to Columbia College in Chicago for filmmaking. and I've lived in Chicago ever since.
So you mentioned you went to Columbia for filmmaking. Is that sort of how you discovered filmmaking, or was this sort of a passion from when you were a child too?
It was a passion from when I was a child. I have a handful of friends and family who kind of take credit for getting me started down this road. I give them all credit, but I got to give more credit begrudgingly as a child, but now appreciatively as an adult, to my sister Meredith. When we were, when I was, 8, 9, whatever the Spice Girls kind of became hot, her and her friends, some cousins, whatever, they would force me to film them doing music videos, lip syncing to pretty much the same song 10 times over. I digitized hundreds of family tapes, and there's hours and hours of just wannabe recorded of, 3 10-year-olds singing Spice Girls. So anyway, that was kind of my first credited music video shoot. But then getting a little deeper into it in high school, I always liked playing with cameras, photography. My dad isn't a professional photographer or anything, but he always had cameras around the house. I have most of my life is documented in some capacity with home videos, pictures, the vacation-y stuff, but then just regular life stuff too. So I've always had cameras around, and then I started enjoying using them. And in high school one day, we had this project where we were supposed to create a newspaper, and being the somewhat lazy high school student I was, but also advantageous, I asked our teacher, who we were kind of close with, he was a good guy, and we were like, this sounds boring. What if we did a newscast instead? And I had I don't even know what it was, just a little Sony DV cam, early 2000s. And he begrudgingly sort of said, okay, fine. Yada, yada, yada. Long story short, we made this 15-minute newscast. I used a free video editing software called ULEAD Video Studio. That's kind of where I started learning editing. And I really enjoyed it. It was fun. All the corny 90s, 2000s effects, I loved them all. Anyway, so we played it for our class, and it was a big hit. Everybody was laughing. I watch it back now with a lot of love. It's also very cringy, of course, 20-something years later, but I really kind of got high off of making my friends and classmates laugh. Mm-hmm. So it kind of started as like this comedy feeling. I really liked that feeling that something that was objectively dumb, but that we did, is being enjoyed by a bunch of people that I know. So that was kind of like that first, ooh, I like this, Anyway, fast forward again a little bit. I kind of became the video guy. We did live morning announcements a few years later into high school, and we would make pre-recorded commercials and ads for like the coffee shop, or they would do like Valentine's Day events, and we would make these kind of like, again, cheesy infomercials, but people loved them. And anyway, that kind of led me to look up film schools. I found Columbia College Chicago. It's close by, but it was also far enough away where I felt like I was going away to college. So I went to Columbia, eventually got my BA in film and video, which is called something different now, but I kind of left it open because I like shooting, I like editing, I like lighting, I like sound, I like everything and anything behind the camera. This right here is my rare in front of the lens thing. So a little nervous because I'm always behind the camera. So anyway, so that kind of took me into what I'll call a year of post-college unemployment. Mm-hmm. Then I got a job at an ad agency just outside of Chicago. I was doing mostly local car dealer ads. Everybody asks Bob Roorman. No, not Bob Roorman. He had his own production crew. But so a few years into that, it was a great first job. Got a little tired of it over time. Corporate work can be a little draining and unfulfilling at times, even though it pays. That's the double-edged sword.
Yep.
And then that kind of eventually leads me into doing more filmmaking stuff.
Yeah, I would love to hear a little bit more about your work in documentaries. Did the documentaries sort of happen naturally, or did they seek you all out? I'd love to hear a little bit more about your production company as well.
Yeah, so starting before the documentaries kind of came around, I had the agency job, and that kind of became, at the same time, conveniently for me, overtime, less and less fulfilling, despite the great boss and coworkers and all that. And then I also started getting more and more freelance work on my own. Mm-hmm. Some weddings at the time, that kind of stuff, and just rant music videos or, you know, kind of getting media badges for some concerts of artists that I liked. I used to offer to shoot for free just to go basically front row to concerts. And so I did a lot of music stuff back in the day. So then I kind of quit the full-time job, started my own company, Teddy Waffles Video Production, the corporate branded stuff, weddings for a couple of years. But then at the same time, that kind of slowly over time became a little less fulfilling and draining, even though I was working for myself only for like a year at that time. So still new in the kind of self-employed world, but it's been some time now and I'm a huge Bulls fan. I don't know how much you can see behind me, but there's like Bulls newspapers and Michael Jordan's on my wall.
Oh, yes.
I just have Bulls stuff everywhere. And I basically just kind of was hustling the Bulls or Bulls TV, their in-house production people, for a job. I went on LinkedIn. I found like five people who on their LinkedIn worked for Bulls TV. And I kind of did the guessing game with emails. You know, my business partner, so stepping ahead a little bit, Jason Polaboy. He was at the time their editor. And so I sent probably three emails to each of these people. You know, I did Jay Polaboy, Jason at Bulls TV, you know, Jason P. I did all those things to all these different people. And I got one email back from Jason who responded by saying, I don't normally reply to cold call emails. He says, but I see we have a similar background. We grew up not terribly far from each other. We both went to Columbia. Also, if I didn't know at the time, but anyway, he said, let's grab a coffee sometime. And so we did. And so that was kind of the start, not the start of One City Films, my documentary company, but that was the start of mine and Jason's relationship. And so at that time, we were both trying to do more freelance stuff versus our 9-to-5 sort of life. Mm-hmm. And we eventually, some years later, we did lots and lots of projects together, but just one-offs for like little small companies and stuff like that. And at one point, we started talking more about documentary, and we eventually made a spreadsheet, a shared Google Doc called Shoot Some Shit, which was just, we have an idea, write it down, little short stories or vignettes of people or small business owners, just people-focused stories. Mm-hmm. And that eventually, a few months later, led to, he goes, hey, I just met this guy named Jamal. He's a really interesting dude. Do you want to meet him and me for a drink or coffee, whatever, and just to talk? I think maybe we could do a little film about him or just even a short video. And Jamal is Jamal Cole, My Block, My Hood, My City, mm-hmm. who's now running for Congress in the 1st District of Illinois. And so what started as a shoot some shit, because we have time and we have resources. I have tons of cameras, lights, lenses, everything in my home office here. And that ended up turning into a 4-to-5-year production, 2 years of post-production. We finally got a film out of it. We're really happy with it. And that one's called The Tiny Ripple of Hope. Just about Jamal's life and the struggles of doing good in Chicago, starting a nonprofit in Chicago, mm-hmm. And his kind of personal journey and struggles to you know, do better for other people, especially kids in Chicago. But
yeah.
So I'm starting to get detailed about Jamal here. So that was kind of like the start of the official sort of start of One City Films. At the time, it was just Teddy and Jason shooting with Jamal. But then over time, you know, we made some more relationships with people. We met our other partner. He just jumped on board. He used to be a corporate guy at Walgreens for years, and then he quit his job because he wanted to try filmmaking. So he's kind of our producer. His name's Nick Jenkins. He's a hustler. He can find anybody's, you know, cell phone or email address, you know. The three of us, my weaknesses are their strengths. Some of their lesser strengths are my stronger suits. And so it's become a really nice little triad of skill sets and creativity, and but also some of that business stuff. But
yeah, having that balance is really important in a creative field, because, you know, some people, like you mentioned, some people have stronger suits, and, you know, that builds for a great working relationship. So now, you're a little bit more established. Do you all still have your shoot the shit, spreadsheet, or do the, do people approach you all a little bit more when you're coming up with, project ideas?
Yeah, I'm sure it still exists. And actually, now you said I should find it for fun, although it's probably just like, it probably just says Jamal on it. I don't even know. But now it's, you know, we're an established production company, basically. We've done some other things outside of the doc world, you know, like some little one-off projects. One more notably, we filmed this, I didn't know at the time, but now I know more about her. Her name is Patricia Tracy. She's an Irish violinist. She's like internationally known. She's really sweet and nice, but also an amazing musician. And originally this past year, with the transfer of powers in DC, she was supposed to perform live just this song that the Bidens personally requested to be played as part of the ceremony, the inaugural mass, that kind of thing. And after all the shit that happened on January 6th, they decided maybe not safe to go in person. So I believe this was Saturday night. Jason texts me. He goes, "Hey, are you available tomorrow morning to film this violinist at Old St. Pat's in Chicago?" And I was like, "Sure. Yeah, I can do it." So we went there, met with them, talked about what they needed to do and for what. And so we shot for 2 or 3 hours in this church. Jason crushed an edit in like probably more than a few hours, but basically overnight.
Wow.
And so all within like 48 hours, we had this, you know, starting from zero to a finished little piece for Biden inauguration. And it was one of those things where if it wasn't Jason and if it wasn't the ability to film at Old St. Pat's or tons of variables which alter your kind of, you know, do I want to do this thing? It's like, oh, it's last minute. It's like, you know, I was going to just hang out tomorrow or something like that. But it's one of those where now that we're done with it, you know, it's happened all so quickly. It was something that we're proud of. And, you know, I shot it. I think it looks great. Jason edited it. It looks great. So the meat and potatoes of One City Films is documentary storytelling. We just like not even telling other people's stories, but just allowing them to tell their story by turning on the camera and, you know, rolling. So our first film we did together officially, it's called Fuck Your Hair.
Mm-hmm.
It's a short film. Or we make jokes now. It's a short 39-minute film, which, as we now know, Live and Learn, is not a short film. It's not a feature film, but it's by no means a short film. But it's about a brewery in Chicago called Five Rabbit. And they made a beer sort of in protest of when Donald Trump announced his candidacy, I think, for president, and his now somewhat infamous lines of all Mexicans are rapists and thieves and drug dealers. And then that line where he said, "I assume some are good people." So they're a Latin American owned and operated family brewery, and they were about to have a deal with the Trump Tower in Chicago to be their house beer, or to provide their house beer. And for a small brewery, that's a huge contract. So I liken it to if, you know, Sony calls me and they're like, "Hey, will you be like one of our sponsored filmmakers or ambassadors?" You know, those kind of people. And then they did something that just really didn't sit well with me and really upset me. And so it's like, well, money or, you know, it was the kind of that juggle. So anyway, it was a fun little film we did together on our own. You know, this is not a paid shoot by any means, but it was fun for us to get our feet wet with the bigger filmmaking world. And we met some great people along the way, which led to other relationships down the line. And Lily Wachowski, who wrote and directed Matrix with her sister Lana, she was willing to sit down for us for an interview. And she doesn't do interviews, but she knows the family who owns the brewery. And I'll have to find this clip even for my own sake, but there's a clip where we didn't use it because, you know, you don't use most of the things you shoot, but
yeah,
she goes, "I actually have some Five Rabbit in my fridge. Like, do you want to get a quick shot of that?" And we're like, "Yeah, sure. And why not? We're here. Let's get a quick shot." And so I just kind of quick set up the camera. And this is all just quick, very informal. And I was kind of waiting. And I just went, "All right, I'm ready." And I was just like, "Okay, go ahead." And she goes, "You have to say action." And I was like, "Oh, you're right. You're right." And I went, "Okay, action." So, you know, this small little nugget for me, it's like, for 3.5 seconds, I directed Lily Wachowski in the film. But anyway, she was very sweet. But that film was on Amazon Prime for a minute and then somewhat mysteriously was pulled from the platform, which we later learned, along with hundreds, probably thousands, if you go deeper down the YouTube rabbit hole of what was deemed to be, you know, like anti-Trump rhetoric. And it's really not. I mean, I'm not, you know, know, that absent-minded, like the film is called Fuck Your Hair,
yeah,
which was directed at him, but that was just the name of the beer. It's translation in English. The beer was Chinga Tupelo. You know, it was more of a film about just the family and their kind of, you know, basically what happened and, you know, kind of the money or morals sort of debate. But so that was our first film. We got 3 local Emmy nominations for that one. And we walked away with 1.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun.
Congrats.
It was my first Emmy. Thank you. Yeah. And, you know, we joke too. It's like, you know, it's not a primetime Emmy, obviously, but it's an Emmy nonetheless. So so it was a fun event and somewhat of an honor. It's a first legitimate hardware, you know, I've probably picked up. But so now it's just, we just have it hosted on Vimeo on demand. If people want to watch it, it's still there. It's a fun little short thing. If you like beer, if you like Chicago, if you like people stories, a little protest and rebellion, it's a fun watch on a weeknight with the beer. And then a real quick, Tiny Ripple of Hope is the film about Jamal Cole. And we sort of like to call it, what do they call it? Like a superhero films, like his origin story.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, now he's running for Congress. He's in a great place in his life. Whereas before he was, you know, using kind of his own money to fund the whole thing, doing everything on his own with a couple of people. But now it's much more of a, you know, well-oiled machine. You know, that was the one that took 5 years to film, unexpectedly. But, you know, documentary, there's really not much to expect. That one premiered at the Slamdance International Film Festival this past year, which was a great honor again, but a bit of a bummer with the pandemic. So we couldn't go out to Park City, which would have been a blast. But it's got some good reception. We're hoping, I don't have any wood around here, but knock on my chair, we'll get picked up for Chicago International this year, maybe, fingers crossed. And it's also kind of, we're working with a couple of distributors right now so that hopefully I could say next time, maybe, you know, go on blank streamer to watch Tiny Ripple of Hope. And then real quick, just a couple of things that we're working on right now. We're in development, pretty, you know, it's pre-production, production, post-production. I feel like pre-production, I guess they all do. Pre-production to me has like 90 different steps, but we're like well into pre-production and development on a true crime series, which, not to sound like that kind of guy, but like can't say much about it, but yeah. It's wild. It's, there's extortion, bribery, greed, just kind of one of those insane stories that you kind of go, you know, how is there not a doc about this story, or how is there not a, you know, a Netflix series about this already? And
yeah,
and so for us, we were like, well, let's make it. So we're kind of in the pitch phase right now with that one, but we're hoping, I'm hoping production could start realistically maybe next year. But it's exciting, and I wish I could say more. So maybe that was a fruitless plug, but. And then we've got some other tiny things. I shouldn't say tiny things, but we've got some other things in the works where we have a lot of what we think are great ideas, great people who should have their stories told. And it's just a matter of getting all the, you know, the logistics and bells and whistles down for starting the process and then finishing it. So more to come.
Those projects all sound really exciting. And, you know, true crime, that's a very hot topic. So I'll be
so hot right now.
So hot. I feel like every time I'm talking to one of my friends, they're like, oh yeah, you know, I'm going to come out with this true crime podcast. And I'm like, cool, do it.
Right. Yeah.
What's one of your favorite parts about making films specifically in Chicago?
My favorite parts about making films in Chicago, you know, other than that, I love filmmaking and filming things, especially documentary, where there's not much, if at all, any scripts or plan, you know. And I like kind of just reacting to things as they happen, very much verite, fly on the wall, you know. Other than like a sit down interview, like I don't really influence anything, just kind of capturing life and capturing stories as they happen. But my favorite part probably about doing it, especially in Chicago, is just all the different people you meet, and how, whether it's for, you know, a couple hours for a sit down, or a guy like Jamal, who, you know, I now would like to call a friend, and we've known him for, man, I don't know, almost 7 years now, 6 years probably. Just people you wouldn't otherwise probably have met, people you otherwise probably wouldn't have started a conversation with. keep going down, people you would never become friends with, all that. It's just kind of amazing. The, you know, again, with documentary being somewhat unplanned or unscripted or whatever, just people you meet that were unplanned or the conversations you have with them. So you just kind of learn. It's humbling. It's exciting. It can make you, depending on, you know, what we're doing, it can make you appreciate your own circumstances a whole lot more. It makes you much more empathetic to people and their situations, just especially this past like 5 years with One City Films, where we've been doing mostly doc work. It's just been amazing to me how, you know, for me, you know, I'll check my calendar, like, oh yeah, tomorrow we're going to whatever neighborhood for an hour to film this quick little scene for a film we're working on. And then I come home from that and I have, you know, a different perspective or a new perspective, or even just, you know, some of these individual people you meet, you know, might say something that sticks with you for life, even though to them it was just a quick passing thought or something like that. It's kind of hard to bottle it up in like a quick little soundbite, but really just other than the actual filmmaking aspect, which I already loved, is just all the people you get to meet. And it's mostly good, but even when it's bad, you know, you still learn something and you can still have empathy for certain people. You know, we all just kind of want the same thing at the end of the day. It's like health, happiness. So it's made me, I think I was already a pretty empathetic person my whole life, but doing this kind of work as opposed to the, you know, the big budget corporate commercial advertising stuff, you know, again, it's great money, but it's like, it's all about the money.
This,
you know, nobody wants to be a doc filmmaker to get rich because unless you're a couple people, which have, you know, it's just, you don't do, no one does it for the money. Money would be great. Hope we sell some more films, but it's just these, just the people you meet and the shared experiences you can have with people who are otherwise, you know, you might subconsciously have thought of as them or other people or, you know, certain things where you're like, oh, well, that doesn't impact me because I'm located here or because I'm this type of person. It gives me this greater connection to just people in general. And especially in Chicago, you know, like I said, I'm from Chicago. I've lived here most of my life, but I'm always surprised with just how diverse the city is and how great that is for everything. It's just, you know, I have friends who moved to LA. I'm not hating on LA, by the way. I'm not hating on any other city in the country. I'm not hating on any city. But I have friends who, you know, they graduate from college. Like, I can't wait to leave Chicago. I can't wait to go to LA. I can't wait to go to New York. That's cool. You know, that's your journey. But maybe it's just my experience. But I would say a big majority of those people, or even some friends of friends who have heard of the same thing, you know, it's almost like, not 100%, but it's like they always come back. Like, even some, you know, more prominent partnerships we've made with some producers and stuff who are from Chicago, a bit older than us, way more experienced and carry a lot more clout and accolades. But, you know, they're like LA producers, but they're from Chicago, and they'll text us like, you know, oh, like, or, you know, they saw, you know, like, oh, you guys were at Portillo's the other day. Oh, man. Or, you know, just little Chicago thing. Chicago has this interesting, like, vibrancy, or it's like this effect. It's so unique compared to, like, you know, LA, New York. Obviously, it's very different. It's kind of the Midwest charm or whatever, but it's big city, it's beautiful, and again, it's all the people. So that 10-minute answer, if you need one word, my favorite part about making films in Chicago is people.
Yes, I would completely agree. From, you know, just doing interviews with, you know, Chicago organizations and businesses, is, yeah, this, the city does have something really special, and sort of something that's a little, you don't find in New York or LA. So totally agree with that.
Good.
So we do have a signature question for the podcast, and this can be about anything, but what is something that you're opinionated about?
Something I'm opinionated about, specifically in kind of the film world, and even expand that to just like TV, entertainment, content, whatever. And there's kind of two parts to that one part. Nothing is more annoying to me than if, and it doesn't have to be a film that I like and you don't like it, that's fine. You don't have to like the same things I like, but certain things that just seem to be universally, if not loved, but kind of accepted as, you know, art or a masterpiece or, you know, certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, and you ask your friend or a family member, like, oh, you guys saw that movie too. Like, what'd you think of it? And they just go, it was okay. And I'm just, again, it's like, that's fine to have that opinion. But then in my mind, not that I'm, you know, I'm no Steven Spielberg, but I'm like, what would you have done better? What didn't you like about that?
Yeah.
And it's always just like, well, you know, it just was okay. And so it always drives me nuts, because I just think about like the hours and weeks and months and years and hundreds and thousands of people, you know, all this cooperative creativity coming together to make something. And even if it does suck, maybe that's like a better nutshell of that thought, is even if something does suck, it's really hard to even make a shitty film or video or, you know, I'm sure a song, piece of art, whatever. And it's so weird, because this whole world is so subjective. So, you know, going back to Columbia days, I always wondered, like, what does it mean that I got a B+ in cinematography class? You know, how do you, like, quantify that kind of stuff? It's like, the teacher doesn't like what I'm doing. That's interesting. But anyway, so something I'm opinionated about films is if someone just gives it was okay, as if they liked the doc or a film or something, but they have no reason why they did or didn't like it, just drives me up a wall. So that's maybe more something that just annoys me than I'm strongly opinionated about. Sub thought to that with film and TV world entertainment, I've had friendly but heated debates about this with some friends. Not all reality TV is trash TV.
Mm.
And I'll be watching something, and then sometimes in the back of my mind, I'm like, wait, no, it is. But then I'll watch another thing and I go, no, this is actually really interesting, even though I'm like going to put myself on blast here though, but you know, like certain like Real Housewives shows.
I knew you were going to say Real Housewives.
Why did you know this?
Because everything out there about Real Housewives is just like, oh yeah, it's this like reality show, but it's like, oh, we're all human. It's like all humanity and how we interact. And I feel like every podcast I listen to that's pop culture talks about Real Housewives.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, it's become its own empire and like genre of itself, you know, you know, so much of it is, you know, having said that, not all reality TV is trash TV, but much of it is. But my wife, Sammy, she watches many of them, not all of them, but the ones that I've tuned into a few minutes here and there. There's a couple that I've probably seen the majority of the episodes. And there's, you know, like New Jersey, for example, there's like 10 seasons of that. So from the filmmaking side, I can't even talk about Real Housewives right now, but I kind of love it. You know, from the filmmaking side, or the story, the human side, despite the editing and, you know, I mean, half the time, you ever wonder why there's like one cut every 1.5 seconds in reality TV? It's because much of it is fabricated, but there's still that element of reality to it with, you know, watching someone's kids grow up from, you know, 3 to 14 on TV, and then understanding the family dynamics, and then if there's a particular family or the story or whatever that makes it into like mainstream media because it's a bigger story than their own TV show. You know, there is this aspect of documentary to reality TV, and some do it better than others. Obviously, you know, I'm not saying Flavor of Love is cinema, because it's not, but you know, so to digress that point, there is some value, I think, to reality TV. It just depends if you're able to kind of draw that line between, you know, is this something that is worth my time to watch, or is it not? And only, you know, you can decide that for yourself. But
you are actually not the first person to talk about reality TV as their opinionated part. So I'm very interested in this theme. So we'll see how many more.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, put us all together in a chat or something. See what happens.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on Sit Still, Look Opinionated. If our listeners wanted to find you on Instagram or any socials, what are some of your handles that we can direct them to?
Sure. Thanks for having me. So One City Films, my doc film company. We're not super active on social media, but just at One City Films, and that's O-N-E City Films. And then me personally, Teddy Waffles. Hope you can spell that yourselves. And I also have my Teddy Waffles video account, which is mostly just kind of, I like taking pictures of my gear and my toys and all that stuff. So it's mostly that kind of stuff. I actually had a, in a tweet form of this story, I had a falling out with Vimeo I got permabanned on Vimeo. So most of what you could have seen a year or two ago is now just on my home server because I got banned on Vimeo. Having said that, you know, One City Films is probably where you can see more of the best recent, most interesting and probably thoughtful work that I've done. And then, like I said, my two partners, Jason and Nick, things we've done together. And onecityfilms.com too, if people still go to actual websites.
Yes, the good old website, the .com.
The old URL, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for your time and thanks for being on Sit Still, Look Opinionated.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And that's all for today's episode. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at sitstilllookopinionated@gmail.com. And make sure to follow us on social media at Sit Still Podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. This podcast was produced by Michael Dritto and me, Claire Malky, and written by me, Claire Malky, Michael Dritto, Fee Bosanyavich's, Gabriel Skavor, Molly Smith, and Charlie Bain. Theme music by Terrence Jackson. Transition music by Christina Walter, and royalty-free music from Epidemic Sound. Check out our referral link in the show notes. If you would like to support this podcast, please subscribe to our newsletter at www.sitstillpodcast.com and visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/sitstillpodcast. This podcast was recorded on the land of the Kickapoo, Peoria, and Potawatomi Nations. And of course, I'm your host, Claire Malky. Oh, and don't forget, stay opinionated. Bye.
Shuffleboard is no longer an old person sport. And I'll just leave it at that. It's the only thing I do besides sit at this desk and edit videos, play video games. I'm at the shuffleboard court, more likely than not within arm's reach of Mike and Christina and their Rat City team.
Yes.
So shout out Rat City. This won't make the final cut, but shout out Rat City, Mike.